It's Friday night. This is Ozarks at Large for June 19th, 2020 on 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ahead this evening, Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics helps us rewind the week's news. We'll discuss the close attention paid to cases of coronavirus in the Arkansas River Valley, petitions regarding a Confederate statue in Fort Smith, and more. Tomorrow on Weekend Edition, Tulsa prepares for President Trump, trying to make sense of coronavirus treatments, the Supreme Court and reproductive rights, and Matthew Reese is HBO's new Perry Mason, and he says this isn't just a reboot of The Legendary Lawyer. Weekend Edition with Scott Simon, tomorrow morning from 7 to 9 on 91.3. Nearly 100 days into a pandemic, Arkansas is reporting the highest single-day increase of community cases today, 662. With an additional 41 new cases in correctional facilities, the total of new cases during the last 24 hours, 703. The most new cases are in Washington and Benton counties once again, 136 and 112 new cases, respectively. Sebastian County reported 25 new cases. And the cumulative total of Arkansas cases now 14,631. There were an additional 6 deaths from the virus reported in the most recent 24-hour monitoring period, bringing the fatality total to 214. The Arkansas Department of Health is reporting an increase of 5 in hospitalizations for a current total of 231. At today's press briefing, Governor Asa Hutchinson announced there were more than 5,100 tests administered yesterday and that the test positivity rate in Arkansas since the pandemic began is 6.5%. The governor used the briefing to re-emphasize a guidance, but not a directive, about wearing masks.
We wanted to really lay this out for the public as to the reasons that face coverings make a difference. And so that's articulated in the guidance, and they make the following recommendations, and these are the highlights of it, that face covering should be worn in all indoor settings where you're exposed to non-household members and physical distancing of 6 feet or more cannot be assured. Very, very important. And then in outdoor settings where you're exposed to non-household members, you should wear face coverings unless there is a space of 6 feet or more that you can practice physical distancing.
Much of the briefing was dedicated to the use of face coverings, and if there is any stronger measure the state can take to ensure people do wear face coverings. The governor says making mask wearing a directive would be problematic.
Well, my experience with Arkansans is you give them information, they will make good judgments. We're trying to give them good information so that they make good decisions in terms of public health. It's also an enforcement issue. And, today I had an email from someone who traveled through Arkansas and went to a particular restaurant and said only two of the wait staff were wearing masks and asked us to enforce our directive, which is appropriate. Filed a complaint, and so, we'll have someone from the Department of Health go out and look at enforcing that. So I think it's most important to use enforcement resources for where our directive is in place in terms of restaurants and other businesses.
Dr. Nate Smith, Arkansas's Secretary of Health, says the continued rise in community cases in Arkansas can be connected to where people are gathering and not wearing masks. He says this is especially important to note as another weekend looms.
When we're looking at our spike of over 700 total cases today, we look back and we see last Friday we also had a spike of over 700 cases. I don't have enough information on those to tell you exactly where each of those individuals acquired their infection, how it was transmitted, but when you see a weekly pattern like that, and you go back the 5 or 6 days of the average incubation period, at least there's a suggestion that what's happening on the weekends is having some bearing there. So we have focused a lot of attention on work sites, which is good and appropriate. We need to continue to do that, but when it comes to the weekend, people can't let their guard down in terms of attending large events, not physical distancing, and especially not wearing masks, because then we can see transmission in those settings. And one of the settings that I want to particularly point out are places of worship. Those are very affirming, important parts of the community's activity, and they can be done just as safely as we can in work sites, but we need the same precautions.
The governor also expressed optimism that the state's unemployment rate for May dropped 1.3% to 9.5%. That's about 4 points lower than the national rate. The governor says it's also very likely the state's public health emergency will extend into the fall, but he says that doesn't necessarily mean a change in the current plan for schools in the fall. And the governor says the next press briefing will be on Monday. Today's press briefing can be viewed in its entirety at Governor Asa Hutchinson's YouTube channel. You can stay up to date with how COVID-19 is affecting the state and our region by going to the COVID-19 update page at KUAF.com. The Botanical Garden of the Ozarks is now open to the public. The BGO is open from 9 until 5, Friday through Tuesday, and as you might expect, it is instituting COVID-19 protocols. Among the precautions, the main building is closed to the public, including bathrooms and the gift shop. Face coverings are required upon entry. A minimum space of 6 feet between people is required. The Butterfly House remains closed, and credit or debit cards are preferred over cash. You can find out more at bgozarks.org. Ozark Regional Transit is making runs to deliver food to people affected by the pandemic. Drivers with buses of food will be making runs of non-contact deliveries beginning tomorrow morning. The effort is coordinated through UAMS Northwest Office of Community Health and Research with funding from the Walmart Foundation. More information at communityhealth@uams.edu. This is Ozarks at Large. Yesterday, the United States Supreme Court upheld the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program. DACA allows certain undocumented immigrants who came to the United States as children and meet several guidelines the ability to stay in the country and work. In a 5-4 vote, the court ruled against the Trump administration's effort to end the program. Following the announcement, Arkansas United, a nonprofit that works with immigrants, hosted a press virtual conference discussing what the decision means for Arkansans. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda attended the event, and she brings us this report.
The Supreme Court's decision means a little bit of certainty in what's been an uncertain time for DACA recipients. Veronica Virgen is a DACA recipient who attended the University of Arkansas at Little Rock's William H. Bowen School of Law and plans to continue pursuing a career as a lawyer.
I am not a lawyer yet. I still have to pass the bar exam. But as far as I know, I am the first openly documented student to graduate from Bowen. And I am thrilled that we were able to at least keep DACA for the foreseeable future. And as previously mentioned, you know, the fight is not over. We still have to keep fighting for the rest of our families. But definitely a win. Definitely looking forward to continuing the fight.
Virgen is one of about 4,500 DACA recipients in Arkansas. The program grants recipients a reprieve from deportation and the ability to work legally in the United States.
I took a job in the nonprofit sector, so doing immigration work with working with children. So hoping to have a lasting impact and using my privilege to help others in the same boat that I was in a couple of years ago and still am, because this isn't permanent status. And I want to reiterate that this isn't sort of like a pathway to citizenship. Right. Our legal status is still in limbo. You know, we have all these degrees and the U.S. government and education system has invested in us. So we would like to give back to our community.
Carla Palma is another DACA recipient in Arkansas, and she wants to work in the medical field.
I am able to further my career in nursing and eventually become a pediatrician. So today's decision definitely cheered me up and uplifted. my hopes and my dreams, and now I know that I can continue that I don't have a deadline, or that I will be able to renew and keep renewing. But like it was mentioned, we do need to keep fighting for a pathway to citizenship, because not only have I lived here since I was 4 years old, but there's many, many other dreamers who don't even know their country of birth. And all of our lives are here. We are dedicated to helping our community.
An estimated 29,000 DACA recipients are healthcare workers. That's according to the Center for American Progress, a nonpartisan policy group. As of December 2019, there were more than 649,000 active DACA recipients in the U.S., according to government statistics. The program was established in 2012, and while DACA does not provide a path to citizenship, recipients could apply to renew their status every 2 years. Things changed in 2017 when the Trump administration announced plans to end the program. Following that announcement, new DACA applicants were no longer considered. Several lawsuits were filed against the administration for terminating the program, and as a result, three nationwide injunctions issued by U.S. district courts allowed people who previously had DACA to renew their deferred action. In 2019, the U.S. Supreme Court agreed to review these legal challenges. While the legal battle worked its way through the courts, Arkansas lawmakers passed their own legislation to assist DACA recipients. Last year, legislators passed one law that allowed the Arkansas State Board of Nursing to grant licenses to DACA recipients, and another law that allowed colleges and universities to offer in-state tuition to certain immigrants. State Representative Dan Douglas, a Republican from Bentonville, was the lead sponsor on the latter bill. Douglas says he's excited about the Supreme Court's decision and hopes it will prompt Congress to take action.
And now it puts the decision-making back on Congress, where it needs to be, to work on a long-term permanent solution to this. Congress is the only place that a real long-term solution to correct the problems we have in our immigration system. And hopefully this will spur them on.
Rosa Velasquez with Arkansas United says there's still work to be done, but the Supreme Court's decision is a victory.
We're going to celebrate today. There's a lot of work that we have to do, but today we rest and we celebrate this decision, and we continue to move forward.
Velasquez says as they understand it, the ruling is meant to restore DACA to its original form from 2012. However, officials have not sent out guidelines yet and are not currently accepting new applications. For now, first-time DACA-eligible immigrants will have to wait and see when officials will begin accepting new applicants. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Arkansas United can assist with DACA applications and has a fund to support renewals. For updates on DACA and Arkansas United's other initiatives, you can visit facebook.com/arimmigrants. And just ahead on Ozarks, our Week in Review with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics.
You turn to KUAF to stay informed. Hi, this is KUAF General Manager Lee Wood. The relentless pace of significant news events is not likely to let up, so KUAF's coverage and commitment to you can't let up either. This commitment has always worked both ways. We serve you, and when you're able to, you donate to keep public radio going. You are the reason our reporting is possible. You can give right now at supportkuaf.com, and thank you for your commitment.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from his home office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics. And a very pleasant mid-June day to you, sir.
It is pleasant. It's not humid, but it's getting a little warm. Us fat boys don't much like it when it starts getting 90 and above.
I would contend that we're still about 15 degrees from the ideal summer temperature, but that's what makes the world go round.
That's because... I mean, that's just something else that tests our friendship. But anyway, we can move on.
All right. Well, let's talk, of course, as many conversations the past 14 weeks have been dominated by, let's talk about COVID-19. We've seen a rise in cases in Northwest Arkansas, of course. There was an article at talkbusiness.net that indicates there are some medical professionals in Fort Smith and the River Valley that are also keeping a close eye on the number of cases.
Yes, and this story, my goodness, we just thought we'd put an update out there about what Dr. Lee Johnson, he's also a state representative, Republican out of Greenwood. He's also medical director for the Fort Smith EMS. He's a emergency room position. And so we just thought, you know, let's try to, you know, two or three times a month, check in and do an update with him on what's going on in Sebastian County, Sebastian and Crawford County primarily, because as you know, most of the focus has not been in this part. The number of cases, especially in the last three or four weeks, has been in Northwest Arkansas. And before that was Pulaski County. Before that was Northeast Arkansas. So Sebastian and Crawford County have not had the cases or the spikes. But Dr. Johnson is concerned that that maybe this area of the state is next. Mm-hmm. And and so to that point, he is encouraging people to, you know, to use masks. He kind of, and again, he is a Republican from Greenwood. He went on, I wouldn't call it a rant, but it was certainly a lecture with Tina Dale, a reporter, and, you know, pretty much said, we've got to stop politicizing these face masks. They need to be worn. It's no, it's not any different than, you know, covering your mouth when you sneeze. You don't just sneeze, you know, in front of people. There's a courtesy there, and wearing a mask is the same thing. You know, he is concerned that behaviors, because we're seeing this all over the state, you know, people are, whether they have COVID fatigue or as the economy opens up, they think they can be maybe less careful. So he's concerned that the cases are going to rise. There are around 100 active cases now in Sebastian County. Of course, we'll get an update later today. 30, 35 in Crawford County. That's not a lot compared to other areas, but they're doing more testing in the area, a lot more testing in the area. His message to everyone is just pretend, or not pretend, just behave as if it's still very active and it could pop up anytime in the area. And he also warns that a lot of the tests are coming back. The people who test positive are asymptomatic. So, you know, who knows how many people are out in the community have the virus, don't know they have the virus, and probably will never know.
Well, and because of coronavirus, of course, traditional graduations all over the country, all over the region, and in Fort Smith didn't happen when they normally would have in May. There's a question whether there will be a traditional graduation at all for Northside, Southside class of 2020. Understandable, but as an article at TalkBusiness.net points out, still disappointing.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I may be an old man, but I can still remember back to my graduation and remember that was exciting. It was a great marker. It was a great experience to have with your friends. It's a great memory you still have. But, you know, they pushed this back and pushed it back, and they had set the Northside High School graduation for July 6th and the Southside for July 7th. And so on Wednesday, is that right? Yeah, Wednesday of this week, the school district put out an announcement and said, look, we're sorry, we just can't do the traditional graduation. You know, look, there are, between the two schools, there are a little over 1,000 students that are graduating. It's especially, that's a lot for an old Johnson County boy. We had maybe 70 graduate in our class. But part of it is not just the COVID and social distancing. There's the heat out on those football fields. You know, it can be, you know, several 10, 20 degrees higher than the regular temperature. In an early July, it's not cool. The restrictions for large outdoor venues still limit capacity to 66%. And the other issue is that there's construction, a lot of construction with this millage plan going on at both high schools that has limited parking. In fact, I drove by one of the schools a couple days ago in the Northside area, and I have no idea where people would park. They'd almost have to be shuttled in. And then when you have shuttles, that's a whole new issue with packing people on shuttles to get to. So I do not envy the school district for having to make this decision. They are working with they say they're working with students and educators and faculty to come up with some options. You know, we talked to Southside High School graduate Sadie Hainsworth and Gavin Vickery. And I think Sadie was hoping maybe she said break us into groups of have like four or five different little graduation ceremonies, and they break us up into different groups. She said at least they would get an experience. So it'll be interesting to see what options that the school district comes up with.
Some type of ceremony. Yeah, those July 6th and 7th, 8th, that's only 2.5 weeks away.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just around the corner.
And if anyone thinks this, the COVID thing is just going to diminish in the next 2 weeks, they need to put the bottle down.
Finally, there is a statue commemorating Confederate dead on the courthouse grounds in Sebastian County in Fort Smith. Discussion now about whether and how to remove the statue. Where are we with that?
Well, who knows, I guess is the right answer, but at the end of this month, the end of June, Sebastian County and Fort Smith officials are supposed to sit down and talk about options, what they can do, what they can legally do. There's some questions about who owns the statue and who owns the ground that it's on. That's that could be a big factor, somewhat similar to what was the issue with the Confederate statue in the Bentonville Square. But they came to an agreement on that, and there's some hope that something very similar will happen with this statue that happened with the Bentonville statue. This statue's been, on the grounds for 117 years. It was, it was placed there as part of, the movement to try to kind of remind the African American community there in the early 1900s that white folks are still in charge. And so there is talk about maybe moving it to the National Cemetery. That doesn't sit well with some people. Some folks oppose moving it to the two cemeteries that the city of Fort Smith owns. That also, according to some people, sends a message that we're still, that the public's still condoning, the message that it sends. Of course, you have what I would think is a large group of folks who are of the, don't be moving our history crowd. It's very similar. It's breaking down somewhat very similar to the arguments that we had 3 or 4 years ago when they changed the Southside Rebel mascot, So this is going to divide the community again. And I think we were just kind of getting beyond the mascot issue. So here we go again with another kind of socially divisive issue. There are two petitions going, one, of course, to remove it, one to keep it. I haven't kept up with the signatures today, but they, as of, I think, Wednesday, they were neck and neck in terms of equal numbers. So, this is going to get a lot more heated before anything happens.
Well, there you go. 2020, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
All right. So we'll meet again next Friday. Folks can find out more about these stories and many others at talkbusiness.net. Michael, stay well. We'll meet again. How's that?
That's great. You do the same. Thanks, Sal.
Thanks.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support provided by Fayetteville Animal Shelter and Services, supported by the City of Fayetteville and dedicated to the welfare of animals and the people who associate with them. Information at 444-3456 or Fayetteville Animal Services on Facebook. The Scott Family Amazium is hosting virtual summer camps for children ages 6 to 12 years old. Camp materials and supplies for hands-on, interactive experiences will be sent to homes 1 week prior to start. These camps are designed with activities in mind, and screen time will be limited. Amazium.org/programs for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. I am in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, along with Susanna Sitek. We are at least 6 feet away, right?
We are at least 6 feet away. We've managed it.
And things are falling. It's just going to be one of those conversations. Positive cases of coronavirus have been found at both the Benton and Washington County jails in northwest Arkansas this week. The Benton County Sheriff provided an update on the situation at his detention facility yesterday afternoon. The aforementioned Ozarks at Large, Zuzana Sitek, joins me now to fill in on what's happening. What is happening?
So on Monday, the Benton County Sheriff's Office released a statement saying they've found two cases of COVID-19 at their facility over the weekend. One case was an inmate. The other was a staff member. That prompted a response from the Arkansas Department of Health. And everyone at the Sheriff's Office and the jail was tested for the virus. Those results came back yesterday and showed that 164 inmates and 13 staff had COVID-19. Here's what Sheriff Sean Holloway told us about these cases.
Of that 164, there are 163 are asymptomatic. We have one that had an underlying health issues. He's now receiving medical treatment at a local hospital. Of the employees, we tested all the employees, close to 300. We had 13 of those that came back with a positive result. All those being inside the correctional facility itself, except for one civilian employee. None of our field deputies tested positive.
That was Benton County Sheriff Sean Holloway speaking there. He also says the coronavirus hasn't spread throughout the entire jail facility and is contained to certain areas. His office is also waiting on about 50 test results after a group of inmates had to be retested. And by the way, the number of inmates at the jail does fluctuate a bit day to day, but on average, the facility holds about 400 detainees.
Had the Benton County Sheriff's Office been doing something? I'm sure they had. What have they been doing to keep the virus, if at all possible, out of the facility?
So first on the front end, Sheriff Holloway says they've worked with local judges and law enforcement to reduce the population at the jail, whether that meant releasing some nonviolent offenders or finding alternatives to arrest. That created some areas in the facility where new incoming detainees who had to be taken to the jail could be quarantined for about 2 weeks before being placed in the general population. Back in March, the county also started providing free medical care to inmates, and we'll continue that policy through the duration of this crisis to encourage detainees to come forward if they do have any symptoms of coronavirus or anything else. Jail staff have also been wearing face masks. Holloway says they're also providing masks to inmates, and while they can't require detainees to wear them in the jail while they're in the pods, they are required to wear these face masks if they're being moved throughout the facility or if they're taking or if they're taken out of jail to a court hearing, for example. And the sheriff's office is also doing temperature checks twice a day, although, as we're finding out, that's only effective if someone has symptoms of COVID-19. Here's Sheriff Holloway again talking a little bit about how they found out that they had coronavirus at their facility.
It wasn't until we had one, or I think we have two, that had underlying conditions and had a symptom. That's when it prompted us to test those individuals and anyone that was around them, including employees. And that was the first round of tests that we did that prompted us to go ahead and test the entire facility and all of our employees to see where we stand on this.
All right. What happens now moving forward in terms of managing the virus now that we do know it's inside the facility?
Sheriff Holloway says the inmates that have tested positive will be isolated from the rest of the population that tested negative, and any staff members who tested positive and are asymptomatic will only work in the areas where the COVID-positive inmates are being held. He also says they've been in talks with the Arkansas Department of Health about whether they will start testing all incoming detainees, but they would have to work out a number of logistics to make that happen. The sheriff's office has also placed an order for bandanas to provide to inmates in addition to the masks, which, as many of you know, can also be used as face coverings.
Wasn't it just earlier this week that the Washington County Jail and Sheriff Tim Helder were on Ozarks at Large because cases had been confirmed there? Any updates on that facility?
So the Washington County Sheriff's Office, like you said, they reported 15 positive cases of COVID-19 at the detention facility there on Wednesday morning. Those positive cases came out of a group of about 40 inmates who were being quarantined already before they could be taken into the general population. Initially, isolating new detainees has been the sheriff's office protocol during this pandemic, so they've been doing that for a while. Since they reported those cases, most of the staff has undergone testing, and all of the detainees have undergone testing, and that was administered by the Arkansas Department of Health. That adds up to about 700 people who needed to get tested. I checked in with Public Information Officer Kelly Cantrell this morning to find out where that stands. She says results are coming in slowly. They've gotten 94 employee test results back. All came back negative. They also got 165 detainee results back so far, and all those have been negative as well. She did mention the number of those initial positive cases earlier in the week did go up by 1 to 16 inmates since the lab missed sending them the results of one of those tests until yesterday. They got that missing test yesterday. And all those inmates, by the way, who did test positive are asymptomatic, much like most of the inmates in Benton County.
All right. Well, I guess you look for the good news where you can find it with all of this. Zuzanna Sitek, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kyle.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last year's Pride Parade in downtown Fayetteville drew an estimated 20,000 people. This year's parade, well, it will have to be virtual. In fact, the entire 16th Northwest Arkansas Pride celebration will be online because of COVID-19. Richard Gathright, the director of Northwest Arkansas Pride, says there will be a series of events beginning a week from today, the 26th, and extending through Saturday, the 27th. In conjunction with International Global Pride. He says the virtual schedule in Northwest Arkansas includes a wide variety of events, from dances to yoga.
Following the yoga at 11 a.m., we will have a Pride Youth Variety Hour, which will feature Taylor Madison Monroe, Maddie Morphosis, Lady Cakes, the reigning Miss Gay Arkansas America, Mon DeMarco, and a lot of special friends on Equality Street for a puppet show, performances, and drag story time. And several educational aspects will also be weaved into that hour. After that, about 4 o'clock, we will move to the Pride Parade, the virtual Pride Parade, where we have asked community members, community organizations, businesses, our sponsors, and our partnering organizations to submit a video, you know, saying what, you know, what Pride needs to them, a call to action. You know, we can take performances, supportive messages. You know, obviously a lot of people need to plug their businesses right now too. And we'll edit all of those together and we will air those starting at 4 and until we run out of videos.
If you want to be in this virtual parade, how do you do that?
So you have to go to nwapride.org, and there is a button on the page that says submit content. You click on that and it has all the suggestions and guidelines for submitting your videos. But the catch is we're going to need those on Friday, June 19th at 11 p.m. We still have some other virtual events that we haven't even got to yet.
Well, let's go.
So at 6 p.m., our good friends Hannah and Ben at Maxine's are going to be doing the virtual happy hour at Maxine's Pride Edition. And they've got some fun surprises up their sleeve for us. Cocktail kits will be on sale next week. Get them early. I imagine they will go fast. Then we will segue into C4 is going to do their Divas Virtual Pride Drag Show for us. We will move into Glitterville, which is our virtual party, since we can't have a live one this year at George's. And we will be featuring 3 different DJs throughout the night that you can dance in front of your TV or computer screen with.
You have to do it this way because of safety and concerns. But what do you think is lost by not being able to have so many people together, able to shake hands and smile at each other?
That's it. It's the human interaction that we're losing. Like, that is so important, I think, to us as a species, and especially the LGBTQ community. Like, we want to be together. We want to gather. We want to have fun, you know, celebrate Pride. And I think that is the biggest thing that we're losing this year, is not being able to do all of this together.
You know, when I was at the Pride Parade last year, I couldn't help but think, Arkansas, of course, having so many rural areas and small towns, and there were probably people who grew up in those small towns were being LGBTQ was not easy or even possible to be public about it. Then to be on a street, the main street of a town, and have 20,000 people there showing support, I just thought that had, I mean, I can't imagine what that must have meant to some people who had grown up and experienced life without that kind of support.
Absolutely. And I am just so thrilled that we have so much support from the city of Fayetteville and experienced Fayetteville to really put this on. The mayor, city council, everybody that we work with in the city is nothing but wonderful and supportive of everything that we do.
But one perhaps advantage or sort of silver lining here is that, you know, if you couldn't make it to Fayetteville on the 26th on a normal year and be part of it, now you can. I mean, you can be
exactly.
anywhere and be part
Everybody
of this.
Everybody can be a part of this, yes. You could be in, you know, London and be a part of this if you wanted to. And that is the cool thing about doing these types of events virtually, is it does give a reach that you might not normally get here. So, I mean, that is definitely a silver lining about this. Is it, you know, it puts us on the map, I feel like, a little bit more, being able to do this virtually. And then hopefully next year when we can hopefully do this in person again, you know, we get a bigger response. We get more people that want to come and participate in Northwest Arkansas Pride.
Can people find a rundown? Because you mentioned there were different platforms at different times. Is there...
Yes, all the details for viewing you can find on nwapride.org. We'll have those up fairly soon, and then we will be posting all of this on our Facebook page and Instagram account as well.
Richard Gathright is the director of Northwest Arkansas Pride. He talked with us yesterday. You can learn more at nwapride.org or nwaequality.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, the story of a man who launched a little-known investigation to stop abuses by law enforcement on the U.S.-Mexico border. The kicker? This was 101 years ago.
He wholeheartedly believes that if you show the ways in which people are being denied due process, that is going to alarm politicians.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Latino USA, Sunday afternoon at 3 on 91.3 KUAF. The number of COVID-19 cases continues to rise in Northwest Arkansas, and the medical community continues to work to slow the spread of the virus. Community Clinic continues to offer tests. Yesterday, we talked with Judd Simmingson, the CEO of Community Clinic, based in Springdale, about their testing capabilities. He says offering coronavirus testing at locations in Springdale, Rogers, and Siloam Springs fits with the clinic's mission.
The component of Community Clinic as a community health center, as I said, I mean, our goal is we're here to serve, and you know, we want individuals to know that there's accessible healthcare. And part of our mission really has been accessible healthcare for all of Northwest Arkansas. But there's another part of that, and that's really regardless of the patient's ability to pay. And so, you know, we see patients with insurance, without insurance, and especially at this time, we don't want there to be a barrier to getting tested, or if you've got symptoms of getting evaluated and treatment. So just the opportunity from an overall health and wellness perspective to really open that up and just encourage, certainly our communities to take advantage of the opportunity to really kind of get in and stay on top of their health care.
What are the testing opportunities that are available?
So from our standpoint, we've got a multitude of testing sites throughout Northwest Arkansas. We've got here in Springdale on our main campus on Emma, Rogers on our Rogers campus on Poplar, and on Siloam and our Siloam campus. And so we're testing throughout the day, Monday through Friday. We've had a couple of other events that have taken place even on alternate days. A few Saturdays ago, we were part of testing. In the last 7 days, going back 7 days, we've tested just under 2,800 people.
Wow.
And have really ramped that up. So in almost 5,000 people in the last 14 days. So really have tried to ramp that up. But we're not alone in this.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly see a number of other entities. Washington Regional has expanded their testing and reopened another site for testing in Fayetteville. Mercy has their testing operation and evaluation that are happening in the Rogers area as well. So we are very much a part of the healthcare coalition in Northwest Arkansas, you know, working together with the various groups to make sure that we get people access to it.
What does it take for an entity such as yours internally to be ready for such a ramp up of testing?
We were really trying to work early on, and much was made in a lot of the early discussions on things like swabs and personal protective equipment. And, you know, there were certainly some times, especially in that early going, that we got down into the smaller levels of stock that we had sometimes in our swabs. But we were also working with the group. We've been very fortunate. There have been a lot of groups here locally that have been philanthropic in their support of the healthcare world, donating personal protective equipment that has helped out us and our other entities. As a community health center, we've also worked with other community health centers, and that was a big part, working with some of our labs and some national companies to increase our amounts of the swabs so that we could increase our testing. And so we really saw that happening about the same time as we saw the surge in Northwest Arkansas. So it allowed us to be responsive to that.
I know we've covered this, but I think it bears repeating. The idea now is, if anyone feels that they need testing, if they're feeling symptoms or whatever, there should be no barrier for them to be able to receive such a test.
Correct. You know, we see a lot. At this point, we're seeing a lot of contacts throughout Northwest Arkansas, so we want to make sure that that we're getting those contacts identified. And quite frankly, as we learn, we're hearing a lot of information about, you know, persons that don't have symptoms. And that is probably one of the greatest challenges that we see in the results of this. Many times, as we look at some of the numbers that we now have, as we're several months into this process in Arkansas, we do see a lot of individuals that think, oh, I'm positive, but I don't have any symptoms, so it's okay. But it is those times where you may then spread that to somebody who does have other medical issues that may not be able to be as resilient against the virus. And those are the ones that we really want to protect. So the goal of this, yes, to come back to your original question, is really to encourage that testing. Anytime you've got symptoms, anytime you've had that contact, you know you've got that, we want to make sure and we identify that early on. And, you know, our goal here at Community Clinic, and I feel like I say this on a repeated basis, though, is that as the community health center and serving Benton and Washington counties, you know, we take all comers and we want to be very receptive to anybody. So no matter the patient's coming from, no matter their status, we are certainly here to help. And so we want to make sure that anyone who's listening, if you have questions, even reach out to us. We are happy to help and try to guide you through this very challenging time.
Judd Simmingson is the CEO of Community Clinic based in Springdale. He talked with us yesterday afternoon. You can find out more about testing and Community Clinic services at communityclinicnwa.org or by calling 855-438-2280. The Fayetteville City Council Tuesday night unanimously voted to pass an emergency ordinance requiring masks to be worn in most indoor public places to help prevent community spread of coronavirus. The city of Little Rock has been looking at drafting an executive order. Fayetteville Alderman Matthew Petty sponsored the draft ordinance that was passed Tuesday. In an email exchange with Ozarks at Large, he shared an online petition encouraging the formation of a state-led working group to develop unified county and municipal COVID-19 protection codes. In response at yesterday's press briefing in Fort Smith, Governor Asa Hutchinson had this to say.
I'd be happy to look at the petition. I haven't seen it. So my comment in terms of working with the cities is that, I'm happy to work with them, but they can't be passing ordinances that are more restrictive than our state guidelines. We have a state path here under emergency order, because we operate together, even though we have different regions, we're ultimately winding up in the same boat.
United States Centers for Disease Control recommends wearing cloth face coverings to help slow the spread of the virus. The virus is mostly transmitted through respiratory droplets released when infected people talk, cough, or sneeze. Americans, however, are divided on wearing masks.
A lot of people have different views on masks. We have to preach the message that it's a public health issue, it's not a political issue. And that's as simple as it can get. And people in Arkansas, our goal is not to punish people if they don't do the right thing in terms of wearing a mask under certain circumstances. Our goal is to educate everybody, provide the information, and ask them to make good decisions.
The governor pointed out that although his public health emergency declaration, which he did extend yesterday through much of the summer, requires isolation and quarantine where needed, wearing masks is not a requirement. Though, at almost every briefing, he has encouraged Arkansans to do so.
Welcome to 60 Second Civics, the daily podcast of the Center for Civic Education. I'm Mark Gage. Due process of law is the constitutional requirement that treatment by state and federal governments that involves life, liberty, or property of individuals must be reasonable and fair and must follow known rules and procedures. The ideas of due process can be found in the body of the Constitution and in the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments, which specifically use the term due process of law. The Fifth Amendment does not mention state governments. Therefore, this amendment applies only to actions of the federal government. The Fifth Amendment says, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The 14th Amendment includes actions by the states. The 14th Amendment says, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. That's all for today's podcast. The show's theme song is Complacent by Cheryl B. Englehart. You can find Cheryl online at cbemusic.com. 60 Second Civics, where civic education only takes a minute.
A listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Mill Creek. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF 91.3. Contributors tonight included Antoinette Grajeda, Zuzana Sitek, and Jacqueline Froelich, who provided details about the petition seeking a statewide approach to COVID-19 regulations. Our show tonight, mastered by Timothy Dennis. The Ozarks at Large theme is titled First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. You can find Daryl on Facebook and Instagram. His most recent CD titled Safe and Sound. Our Friday night thanks to Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics for his help. You can read more about what we talked about at talkbusiness.net. We will be back with you Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large and back Monday at noon to start another new week of editions of our daily show of Ozarks at Large. You can always find out more about us at ozarksatlarge.com. You can always subscribe to our free podcast through just about any major podcast distributor. You can also ask your smart speaker to play Ozarks at Large. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm Kyle Kellums. Have a great weekend.